Chapter 3, When Bayhood Goes Bad. Love is blind and can render you averse to making sensible decisions. Sometimes we get into relationships and lose all semblance of grounding because those endorphins have us all googly-eyed. This is why I must judge us for bayhood that goes bad. My friend was dating a dude who defied logic by being about 20 types of terrible. I was actually impressed by his inability to be a well-functioning adult. It was like he was allergic to adulting. But I'm thankful for him because he's proof positive that I need to get my creativity game up because I could not make up a better story of when bayhood goes bad. We will call my friend Tina, and we'll call bad bay Carlos. Tina is a professional lady with a job that has benefits and perks and a good salary. She owns her own apartment and she enjoys long strokes in the sheets. Carlos was a dude with a bike. That's about it. As in, Carlos's bike was the most valuable possession he had, and it was his only mode of transportation. His employment was questionable. Tina didn't know what he did, and I suspect she was afraid to ask. It would be nice to assume that he worked at the casino since he spent so much time there. Carlos clearly had a bit of a gambling problem, because only people who are paid to work at the casino should be there so damn much, especially when it's 15 miles from your house and you have to ride a bike all the way there every day. Go home, Roger! Anyway, so Tina was filled with Carlos lust, and he was best when he was horizontal, well, sometimes vertical, because he did that trick where he held her up and, let me just stop. But how do I know all this? Because one night, when she was frustrated about him, she spilled the beans. It was raining outside, and he was at the casino, unable to get home because his bicycle was a bicycle and not a damn car. He wanted her to come pick him up and had the nerve to get mad that she was not about that life. I was like, let me get this straight. Yo, boo, who was a gambling addict, riding around town on a bike, got mad at you for not wanting to scoop his ass up because it was raining and he was stuck at the casino? She huffed, basically, and I realized that I need new friends with higher self-esteem and better decision-making skills because Jesus be some discernment to pick them better. Also, was Uber unavailable on that rainy night? The public transportation go on strike? How do you get stranded at the goddamn casino jobless Jonah? Anywho, she didn't pick him up, and she didn't hear from him for another week, and he was not returning her calls. Was Bicycle Bob that mad that she didn't give him a ride? She was worried about him, so she decided to go check on him at his mom's house, because that's where he lived. Let me repeat that. Tina went to Carlos' mama's house, where he lived, to find out why he was not returning her phone calls. When I tell you I was so done that I was burnt to a crisp on the inside, I went from medium rare to burnt so quick. Your 10-speed riding, gambling addict boo with a temper also lives with his mama? In that moment, I wonder why my friend didn't seem to have mentors or role models or sense. Because ain't no way this should be the chump she's dealing with. No way. I also wondered where I had gone wrong with friends so foolish. But I needed to know what she encountered at mom's crib. What happened? Well, 10-speed Thomas' mom informed Tina that her son the degenerate was in jail. At least he wasn't just ignoring her. Silver linings, guys. Why was he locked up? Well, he had violated his probation, which she did not even know he was on. And why was he on probation? For making counterfeit money, which he used at the casino to gamble. He was back in jail for doing it again, because clearly he is dumber than a box of toenail clippings. This is not a situation where you ought to be too legit to quit, Bike Billy. At this point, I wanted to write out all the foolishness on a giant whiteboard for her. Gambling addict, on a bike, lives with his mama, expects you to pick him up when it rains, goes MIA, is actually in jail for trying to feed said gambling addiction. Clearly, he isn't even good at the gambling thing, because if he was winning, he wouldn't have to print fake money. And he would not be riding around town in a 10-speed, 15 miles each way to go get his money flushing habit on. Carlos excelled only at failing perpetually. This was the man she was now basically mourning, and I sat flabbergasted that she wasn't too embarrassed to tell anyone. This is the kind of thing that you take to your grave and leave between you and your God because you should be too ashamed. The sheer quantity of bad decisions here surpasses the number of snowflakes on Mount Everest. If I was with a nincompoop like Carlos, I'd deny so hard that I get whiplash from shaking my head no so vigorously. He was a total idiot. And you heard me say idiot, not idiot, because Nigerians, we mean it when we insult people, and you have to say that with fervor. So yeah, this story was so entirely ridiculous that I wondered out loud, how did you get here? Nobody's supposed to be here. Shout out to Deborah Cox. I didn't have to ask Tina why she was even entertaining Two Wheel Tyler. That peen was too bomb. Let me translate. Carlos was a dick daddy. He was a penis prince. He was a stroke savant with a crown cock. And my girl was addicted. But I am here all day, folks. There's a fact that cannot be denied or disproven by science. Lean in close and receive this truth. Behind every ain't good for nothing man are bedroom skills beyond measure. It's like the universe's way of balancing itself out. It should have its own chapter in every holy book and scientific text because it is an actual factual. So many of our worst heartbreaks were probably caused by men who wouldn't know responsible if it slapped them in the face. Sure, we should have realized they weren't about nothing when the only texts we get were, "What are you doing?" at midnight. But we remember the times we had in betwixt them sheets and that one trick and how we needed a 5-hour nap afterwards because they had temporarily stroked the spirit out of us and we needed to recharge. So I'm told by a friend, of course, I'm not saying I've experienced any of this. Hey, Mom! All of this is at play when we deal with men like Cycling Clyde. Tina was caught up in the rapture of Carlos' sheet skills, and I almost understood, although I still wouldn't have told a soul. I think what happens is that these guys spend so much time working on being fantastic at sex that they have no time left to nurture and develop other areas of their lives. When you've perfected the art of making people orgasm at will with beguilements, shortcuts, twists of the tongue, and angles of the body, then I get why you have no energy left for learning to read. I could see why you can't hold a job or file taxes. It's not your fault, gentlemen. You were so busy learning how to be of sexual service that you missed the class on being a decent human being. But none of us minded after we handed you the panty draws and you proceeded to do the job so well that we wanted to tip you afterwards, but we fell asleep directly. That makes me reminisce about every Scorpio man I've ever dated. I can't even. Mom, skip this chapter. I've heard about Island Peen Syndrome, too. It's an urban legend, but proven true by Lauryn Hill's life. That sleeping with West Indian or island men will render you useless to functional life. Apparently it is the kind of Pinot Noir, shout out to Titus Borges, that will have you babysitting your enemy's kids willingly. Word on the street is that if you mess with the wrong or right, oh so right, sperm stick, you might find yourself washing dishes with a scarf on your head and no shoes on. Next thing you know, you've sold all your possessions and moved to a commune where your sister wife number 8, endorphins are some intergalactic imbeciles, I swear. They tell us all lies sometimes. Things like, exercise is fun, and this guy is decent. Totally trust him. This magic peen carrier is also the kind of man who will give you a promise ring, an entirely meaningless concept that perplexes me to no end. And not only will you accept, but you'll show it to all your friends and be so giddy that you miss all their strong side eyes directed at you. And because he's perpetually in between jobs, code for never working, is probably made of the finest in diamondique stones and synthetic sterling silver. I don't understand them or their purpose. What are people promising when they exchange these rings? Is it one of those, I'm promising that one day I'll promise you my all things? Are they a promise to one day get engaged? Because no one should be here for that promise inception. Are they a promise to get married? Because then they're engagement rings. Do you see what I mean? Pointless. If your significant other gives you a promise ring, feel free to accidentally lose it down the drain. It has about as much importance and symbolism as a heart drawn in the sand at low tide. Who has the time for these bald-headed, can't-commit-to-real-thing games? Promise rings are for 8th graders, not adults. A chastity promise ring? Maybe. A promise ring to stop smoking? I see it. A promise ring to one day propose to you like an adult? No. The only folks who can get away with rocking promise rings should also have curfews. If you're grown as hell and you're walking around rocking a promise ring, you need to go sit down and think about your life. I hate having a conversation with someone when they're wearing a ring on their ring finger and it goes like this. Me. Oh, you got engaged when? Her. Girl, nah, it's just a promise ring. Isn't my sweetie the best? As I blink slowly and chuckle nervously. Well, it was good seeing you. If you're not ready to propose, get someone a pendant or a bracelet or a trip to Fiji. Don't be dangling what could be with a promise ring. And on the subject of stupid love decisions, Someone who would accept a promise ring is also 98.2% more likely to get their partner's name tatted on them after their third date. It's science. Look it up. But don't, because I made it up. It's true, though. Tattooing the name of a significant other on you needs to come after careful deliberation, knowing that person for a long time, and taking a blood oath that forbids a breakup. It probably should not happen after that session where you had multiple toe twitches for the first time. You are not in your right mind, beloved. Human beings are more short-sighted than a bat in daytime. Relationships start off all hot and heavy, and that honeymoon phase has us thinking new love is perfect love. This is certainly not the time to go to a tattoo parlor to get your beloved's name permanently affixed to your lower back, or your bicep, or your chest. Wait until you've woken up next to them in the morning and experienced their dragon breath. See if you're still 100% after the first couple of times their good morning curled your eyelashes before they curled your toes. See if you still like them after you've seen their underwear in the middle of the floor, even though the laundry basket is right there. Do you still like them after you meet their mother, who seems unwilling to let go of her baby? Do you still like them after you've had a major argument where you wanted to cuss out them and their ancestors? What about when they were sick and acted like they got polio, even though it was just a cold? What about when they were down and out and lost their job? Are you still loving bae at their worst? If you haven't gone through any of this yet, me thinks you should wait on the tattoos. I'm a believer that you don't know somebody until you've seen them handle conflict, or you've seen them at their worst. If you love them through that, and you've considered it for a while, then maybe you can go get their name installed on your body. What I am not doing is getting permanent work on my body for temporary situations, like many relationships tend to be. I'm not getting nobody's name tattooed on me, not even my own. I'm not even sure I like me enough. I could prove my love is real in other ways. I can add you to my Netflix account and give you access to my Amazon Prime so you know what we have is legit. I might even share that last spoon of rice with you to let you know that I'm here for you, boo. But tattoo your name on my body? No, sir. Part of me thinks people get tattoos of their partner's name to show that they're in it for the long run on some ride or die type thing. The idea that folks need to stand by their boos in the face of any and all types of bad behavior and bullshit is nonsensical. It is something that gets many of us in situations that we feel guilty about backing out of, because we feel like we need to be the Bonnie to their Clyde, even if we suffer tremendously for it. Like Tina and our boy Carlos. The moment Tina heard Carlos was in jail should have been the moment she bounced and considered that relationship, which was really a fuck buddy ship, done. Odds were, homeboy was going to be doing the time he avoided the first time. Now, you're probably saying I'm bogus or a flake. You're right. I am not ride or die. Those are some pretty limiting choices. So if I'm not riding, I gotta die? Can I get off and take the bus? Is let's talk about it an option? What about ride or pause this if we need to? There are people whose partners have been sentenced to 20 years in jail and they're waiting for them. That is adorable and commendable. However, if you weren't with me shooting in the gym, or we weren't childhood sweethearts and BFFs, or I don't have your big-headed kids, I am certainly not going to waste my best years as you sit in jail or engage in hijinks. Our love story will need to be paused until further notice. I am not doing a countdown for your Freedom Day, sitting by the gate for years. That's unfair. Shoot, I might be the mother of your kids, and if me riding ain't in the best interest of our spawns, then I'm still getting off at the next stop and calling my friends to come pick me up. I'm more ride or surely you understand why I'm done here. The way my loyalty's set up, you might get one get out of jail free card because we go together really tough and I love you. But what I will not be doing is enabling dysfunction by always being there when you royally mess up. Sorry, not sorry. Don't be catching no cases on my dime. I got my global entry status and TSA pre-check to protect. We are too grown for me to be constantly tied to your bad behavior. Who has time for that? Far too many people allow this ride or die thing to keep them in expired relationships. If you constantly have to play bondsman for your beloved, you're in a codependent prison of your own making. People will keep doing what they can get away with. When the relationship has soured, it should be like cutting off your mooch and son's credit cards. Fly, little birdie, get the hell out my nest. To be ultra real, ride or die expectations usually fall on the shoulders of women who often don't get the same level of commitment from their men. Men do not get told repeatedly to stand by their women no matter how much drama they bring into their lives. They get the message that they always have more choices. Meanwhile, women are told to stand beside and behind our partners in spite of their foolishness. I can be loyal, But loyalty isn't blind commitment to co-signing on stupidity and bad decisions. Once my life starts being affected by your tomfoolery, I might have to moonwalk out. Some people have gone to jail for their booze, and I applaud them for their courage. That could not be me. If it comes down to me or you, trust I'm picking me. I can't fight, and my hair products are out here. So as you see, it would be harder for me on the inside. So thanks for understanding. If we're both mature and grown, neither of us would want to put our partner in a situation that would put their livelihood and happiness in jeopardy. If you're constantly acting a fool, it means you aren't considering me and your actions, because clearly you don't care how they could affect your loved ones. Call me simple, but I think bayhood needs to come in less dramatic packages. My love motto is that my relationship should push me to be a better person. My partner should encourage me, challenge me, seduce me, and build me. I will aim to do the same. At any point in time, one person might be holding the other up, because isn't that part of being a team? You might have an off day, but your teammate picks up the slack. That's fine. There are times you'll both have an off day, recalibrate and come back. Maybe the off day becomes an off week or off months. That's when you have to determine if you need to be on the same team at all. If, of course, during the off week, one of you goes and does something they weren't supposed to, like Ross did to Rachel, and a break baby happens, then all bets are off. Can we talk about break babies? Oh my God, talk about true pettiness. You're having a rough time with your boo, so you go and have sex with someone else. Petty already. But a break baby means you went and had sex with someone who was not your partner without taking proper safety precautions. You didn't use a condom? What in the hell is wrong with you? I get that you might be distraught, but come on, brah. Come on, sis. The least you can do is to make sure that you wrapped up. Not only are you being careless about yourself, you're also being careless with your partner's health. Break babies are beautiful, because all babies are beautiful, even when they're funny looking. Especially in those first few weeks when most of them look like baked potatoes. Still, beautiful human beings. However, in the words of Dorothy Zbornak, the Sorceress of Shade, condoms, Rose, condoms! Being on a temporary break doesn't mean you need to go dip your stick into anyone or have your love pocket dipped into with no protection. I prefer love pocket because it is surely a pocket that is full of love and should be treated as such. Break babies are extreme, but bayhood can go bad in much simpler ways. I've never been the type to check a significant other's phone or text messages or ask where they're going. I don't care where you're going, and I trust that you won't show up and act out. We've set certain boundaries and expectations in our relationship, and it is your prerogative to keep those in check. It is up to you to know what you can and cannot do. If you cannot tell me about it, then odds are you weren't supposed to do it and you feel guilty. That in itself is wrong. I did not attend any academy, so it is not my job to police you or try to catch you in any act. If I get to the point where I feel the need to do that, I'd rather just walk away, because it means you've lost my trust, and without that, we have nothing left. Our foundation is cracked, and I'm not living in a shaky house. Leave if you can no longer be secure in what you've built. Fake forgiving and forgetting is pointless if you will always resent that person or hold it over their head. I know myself. It's really hard for me to get over betrayals or lack of trust. Jesus forgives. I pout. This is why it's better for me to end things, because I will feel some type of way about you for a while. I would rather get that out of my system by myself than force a relationship to continue. I do what's right for me, but of course, after the breakup happens, I'll be on my couch for weeks eating all the rice and ice cream and watching movies about why love sucks. I might even call you once to tell you how much you suck. But I cope. You can do all bad by yourself, ladies and gentle people.